Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at Your Financial Choices. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there. Today is January 31st, 2018. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 26,149, the NASDAQ at 7,411, and the S&P at 2,823. Our topic tonight is conversations about taxes and cash flow planning as part of your estate planning. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. You could talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can submit questions for the show through that website as well. Tonight, I am excited to have a guest, attorney Dennis Pappas of Vassiliadis Pappas Associates, LLC. Dennis, as he goes by, practices exclusively in the areas of elder law, trust and estate planning, trust and estate administration, special needs planning, and veterans pension benefits planning. He's admitted to practice law in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, a graduate of the Temple University Beasley School of Law, and received his undergraduate degree in political science from Temple University. Mr. Pappas is a VA-accredited attorney for the preparation, presentation, and prosecution of claims for veterans benefits before the Department of Veterans Affairs. He frequently lectures and teaches, which is how I met him, and is a frequent guest of ours. Welcome back to the show, Dennis.
Good evening, Lori. Good to be back again. Thanks for having me.
And can we talk for a moment about the firm, Vassiliadis Pappas Associates? I think we have a congratulations in order.
Thank you, Lori. We have a new name to the firm name, Pappas. Vassiliadis and Associates is now Vassiliadis Pappas Associates. I'd like to thank Stanley Vassiliadis, my mentor, and my partner, George. The three of us are still there working hard with all of our staff. So the name might have changed, but we're still there in the same great service for all of our clients.
Very good. I'm excited that you've hunkered down here and you're going to stay in the Valley and keep working with us. For our listeners, I met Dennis teaching many, many years ago, and what I really admired was his ability to explain complex topics and ideas in a very understandable way, which is why he's a great guest as well, because that's what we try to do here at Your Financial Choices, is help our listeners learn and understand what we're talking about. Because quite often attorneys, you know, have a very sophisticated way of talking, but you always seem to be able to bring it down to earth for people, and I appreciate that.
Well, and it makes it easy to teach when people are good students, and you clearly probably knew more about what I was teaching than I did at the time, but we won't tell too many people that.
Well, I'm excited about our topic tonight and talking about taxes and cash flow planning as part of estate planning, because you know, people think that estate planning is just about beating the federal estate tax. And so I thought maybe tonight we could break down the myths of what estate planning is and present it in, you know, more in the context of a conversation. So I want to hit on a few high-level assumptions, and then as we move through the show, let's just talk about some of the planning opportunities that estate planning lends itself. So first, our timing couldn't have been better with the recent tax reform. So let's give some framework for what the federal estate tax was and is, and let's let's move into why that's not the driver to good estate planning. I think people quite often think, oh, federal estate taxes, I have to do estate planning. And now they might think, oh, it's not going to be, I'm not going to be subject to it. So they don't think they have to do anything.
Yeah, and I really love this topic because, as you know, many clients or referrals or people asking questions, it's always about the federal estate tax. And what do? Which we're going to do right now in a moment. We're going to say, look, don't worry about the federal estate tax. It doesn't apply to you. Here's 50 other issues that we really need to worry about. And so it's a good driver in that respect to get through the door and explain some things. But very quickly about the federal estate tax, why don't we need to worry about it? So the trend over the past decade has been that Congress has always increased the limit to which estates have to pay federal estate tax. The new law effectively puts it out of reach of most people. Under the new law, you would have to pass away with approximately $11 million or more per spouse in order to worry about the federal estate tax. So I would say, I think it's less than a half of 1% of the population in the entire country even needs to worry about the federal estate tax. Where that's going to go, we don't know. But the trend is that it keeps going up. It used to be 600,000 many years ago, million, 3.5 million, 5 million. So we're at $11 million approximately per spouse. Something, again, most people don't need to worry about. Something to stay tuned on, though, right? Congress never, or usually doesn't always do it permanently. This law is set to expire at the end of 2025. So let's stay tuned in the midterm. But for right now, we really don't need to worry about the federal estate tax. So what do we need to worry about? What are estate planning, CPAs, financial advisors, what do we really need to worry about? And what's the crystal ball for the future? A couple areas that I think we really need to focus on. Number one, the aging of our citizens. This would come into elder law planning. We have aging parents, aging family members. A lot of times we have clients that ask, what type of long-term care planning can we do? Is long-term care insurance appropriate? Should I think about doing gifting to my kids at this point? So there's certain things. Can I do nursing home asset protection planning? So I think certainly that's a demographic, and especially in Pennsylvania, as you well know, we have one of the highest percentages of senior populations in the country. I think we're definitely top five, potentially top three. So that's a category we need to focus in on. Another category is the higher incidence of children with disabilities, whether it's short or long-term special needs. We need to start talking and thinking about, do we need a special needs trust? Do we want a first-party trust, a third-party trust? Is life insurance an appropriate product that we can use to help finance some of the short-term or long-term needs of a special needs child? Who's going to help take care of that child? It's going to be a family member. What care agencies are out there? So that's another area that needs a lot of thought and careful planning. A third topic, what happens when we have minor children and potentially there's a large inheritance? How are these children, whether they're 21, 25, 30, how are they going to manage this inheritance? And what's an appropriate way to pass the inheritance? Do we want to do it outright? Do we want to consider some type of trust or trust-like mechanisms? Even if the children are not minors and we're leaving an inheritance, as you well know, what happens if we call these potential red flags in estate planning? The child's in a rocky marriage. There's a looming divorce potentially. There's a disability. They're a spendthrift. They're not good at handling money. They have creditors. So we'll talk about potentially some things in there. I think another area that's ripe, second marriages and blended families.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think that, in addition to qualified retirement planning, IRAs,
yep,
those are really, you're shaking your head because that's what keeps us at night, I think, up at night. So one last thing, as you know, and we talked about this right before we went live, is income tax planning. We're not worried about the federal estate tax in most cases, but in income tax planning is becoming much more complicated. So I know the CPA in you is thrilled about that because you're a nerd like I am, yeah, and you like the nuts and bolts. But part of that is also, we're going to talk about trust a lot. What are the income tax ramifications of using a trust, and how does that fit with either the beneficiary or the client's income tax structure? So I think, forget the federal estate tax, that's just off the top of our head, a couple areas that I really think estate planning, that's what we're looking at in the future.
It's funny. Today I was actually interviewed for a PICPA, which is Pennsylvania Institute Certified Public Accountants, for a column I had written about the changing tax structure with tax reform, and are accountants and CPAs still going to be doing tax preparation, and do you still need a CPA? And I said, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. People don't realize there's so much more planning behind just doing a Schedule A itemized deduction. And you just hit on all of these items, that this is precisely why estate planning is valid at any level for any person. It is not just about federal estate taxes, and it is not just about getting that will done. There's a lot of planning that can go into it, and a lot of these areas need addressing and are more applicable to people than they even sometimes realize. We're coming up to our first break. We're happy to take questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and we can take questions live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C., and she'll write it down and bring it in to us. We did also receive a question online from one of our listeners, and that was from Tom, and it was talking about planning for childless couples. And so we're going to talk about that as we go through the show as well, and we appreciate you sending that question, Tom. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2018, WDIY is celebrating 23 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support, and we couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices here on WDIY. And we have in the studio with us this evening attorney Dennis Pappas of Vasiliadis Pappas Associates. And we're talking about taxes and cash flow planning as part of your estate planning. And Dennis just gave us an overview of how estate planning is so much more than just planning for estate taxes, and laid out a number of areas that we need to visit. And when we talk about cash flow planning too, Dennis, some people might think, how does that become estate planning and even the taxes? But at this point, cash, I like to remind people that estate planning isn't just about the assets that you have when you die. It's about maintaining those assets, living off those assets, managing those assets. So there is a lot of estate planning during our lifetime. So let's talk about what that looks like and why people have to pay attention.
Yeah, and this is a really important topic, because I think the conventional thinking is that estate planning is, I go to the lawyer, I do the will, my estate plan is done, mm-hmm. right? And that's probably the furthest thing from the truth. Regardless of assets, regardless of marital status, regardless of any of these other issues, sub-issues that we've talked about and introduced, I think fundamentally the core, the foundation of a really good estate plan is the will. It also includes a financial power of attorney, a health care power of attorney, and a living will, fundamentally at the end of the day. Now, the will is going to take care of assets after somebody passes away, but you raise the issue of what happens while the client's alive. In the event of a physical or mental incapacity, what's the plan for how the assets are going to be managed? Who are going to be the fiduciaries, the people that are responsible? Do we have an agent under power of attorney? Do we have a backup? Who's going to make those important healthcare decisions, especially if there's a very difficult end-of-life decision-making situation? So preserving the assets is one part of the equation. But the assets will not be preserved if there's not a good plan as far as who's going to be running the ship in the event of the client being incapacitated. So I think those are very important. And Tom, I'm very happy you mentioned Tom, because he had that very good email ahead of times. It becomes even more difficult and important to select our fiduciaries, our executors, our trustees, our agents under power of attorney, right? Fiduciaries just generically the person who has the legal authority under these various hats. If we don't have other family members or trusted friends, which is, you know, somewhat common, we might look to financial institutions to help with the financial decision making. There's certainly trust companies. There are banks with trust departments out there. on the healthcare side, do we want to maybe start looking at or interviewing healthcare agencies? There are agencies out there where people don't have someone to be the healthcare decision maker. For example, I need a healthcare advocate. What if I'm mentally or physically incapacitated? I need somebody to help me to take the doctor's appointments. I need somebody to sign me in and out of a hospital. I need someone to come to me to the doctor's appointment to help me understand what my healthcare options are, especially, again, if I'm older, if I'm declining, if there's been a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or dementia. So I think there's definitely, and we'll talk about later some of the tools, but the preview certainly is, you're absolutely right, Lori, these other documents, the powers of attorney especially, are very important for lifetime estate planning, not mm-hmm. just the death part of estate planning.
Right. It's about making sure that we're also maintaining those assets. And sometimes people, if they are becoming incapacitated, they might have signs of dementia before it's even realized. We have stories of where people are doing online shopping, QVC, they're making donation after donation after donation because they're losing capacity. So we need help in navigating the ongoing asset management too as we age. And sometimes it's not even as we age. Sometimes it could be business opportunities too for young professionals. Maybe that's managing assets that might require part of their estate planning. If they are business owners, what's the business structure? What's the best contract for them? That type of thing. So let's talk a bit. So about people who have, let's say, plenty of resources, they want to share their wealth. So maybe they are in a position where they're not having to preserve it for their ongoing caregiving, etc. But maybe they have so much wealth that while they're alive, they want to share it. So what kind of estate planning techniques during lifetime, again, might one use to do estate planning, and what would be the benefits of that?
And we could, I think here we'll introduce a couple of concepts. Yeah. I mean, this is really a...
There's so much
to
talk about.
Do a whole day on this, and it's really fun. But anytime, at least in my opinion, that a client comes and says, Dennis, I'd like to do some lifetime gifting, a couple considerations. Number one is the simplest method is an outright gift. Mm-hmm. And then right. we have to think about, well, what are we gifting? Are we gifting cash? Are we gifting capital assets? And you've done lots of sessions on basis, mm-hmm. right? So for the stock, highly appreciated stock, we might need to sit down with the client and bring the financial advisor CPA in and to evaluate that. Sometimes we don't want to do outright gifts. Sometimes we want to look at making restricted gifts where the client can retain the right to income. For example, a classic scenario might be, and I've had this recently, client has a $500,000 block of PP&L stock, which, as you know, is generating quite a bit of dividends. The client wants to retain those dividends during their lifetime for cash flow income purposes. However, they would like to leave the principal remainder to one of the local universities. So there are ways, whether you use certain types of charitable annuities, certain types of charitable trusts, where the client can have their cake and eat it too. They get the income, they get the charitable deduction, and the charity also gets the beneficial use of the corpus of the principal afterwards. With respect to gifting, we're talking a little bit here in the context of charities, but also it's not only charities, right? Because a lot of times the clients say, you know what, Dennis, you know what, Lori, I have sufficient assets and income. You guys have run all the numbers and everything looks good. I don't want to wait until I die for my kids to get their inheritance. By that point, their mortgage is going to be paid off. The grandkids are going to be out of college. I want my beneficiaries to have some access to my wealth now. So what are some ways to do that? And we need to be careful, for example, with things like outright gifting, because if we're doing outright gifts to family members, what happens if that child passes away before the parent? What happens if that child gets sued? Or what happens if that child gets divorced? What happens if the child's in a high-risk profession? They're a doctor, a lawyer, a contractor, people that have a high incidence mm-hmm. of getting sued. So that's the analysis, right? That's where the client comes in and says, Lori, Dennis, here's my goal. Here's what I want to do. And our job, right, is to say, well, here are the various options, outright gifting, charitable trust, charitable annuities, 529 plans. There's all kinds of cool little tools that we have in our toolbox there.
Yeah. Folks, we're coming up on our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. 10, and you can talk live on air with us or off air. We're talking about taxes and cash flow planning as part of your estate planning and giving you a good broad overview of all the complexities around estate planning, but you don't need to be overwhelmed by those complexities because professionals like Dennis can filter through some of the applicable strategies to be used for your personal situation. Again, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is Lori Siebert, your host. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Dennis Pappas of Vasiliadis Pappas Associates, and we are talking about taxes and cash flow planning as part of your estate planning and different strategies that you can use to kind of preserve the assets you have during lifetime, taking care of them in the event of your incapacity or disability, and also making sure that you preserve assets for your own use. Dennis touched on things such as our aging population, maybe it's elder planning that you need, long-term care planning, that all comes into it as well. Also, what if assets pass to minor children? So we're going to talk a little bit more about this as we go through the show. But Dennis, let's go back to how people feel when they're looking at estate planning. We've talked a little bit about the basics, but it always seems like there's a big roadblock. So we do these shows, we try to educate, we try to take the, you know, the fear out of it. But at the same time, people seem to have this roadblock about moving forward with their estate planning. So is it the fear or is it the cost that they're afraid to pay attorneys, which I always like to say, what's the cost if you don't pay an attorney? So, you know, do you have a sense of that? What the roadblock is?
I don't have the answer. And the reason I say that, I think it's interesting because you and I, we're obviously very passionate about this, as hopefully our listeners can tell. You can't see us waving our hands here, but we're waving. But I think the people that come to see us, they're already invested. So we're seeing people that are proactive, that are paying attention, and they're not being reactive. I think certainly it's emotional. And I'll give you one example that I recently had. Longtime client, very difficult situation with her kids, and she wanted to disinherit the two kids. It took her about 5 years. She had a will. The kids were in the will. Over the course of 5 years, she would call me periodically and say, Dennis, you know, the kids are rotten. I'm going to take them out. I'm going to take them out. And I would say, you know, take the time you need to think about it. I'm here whenever you need me. 5 years later, recently, she did come in, and she did change her will. Now, I think in her case, it was very emotional for her, very gut-wrenching. So sometimes I'm not sure if people are ready to quite deal with these. There's a child with special needs. There's an emotional component to that. Mm-hmm. There is a child who's going through a difficult divorce. It's an emotional component. So I definitely think emotion is part of that. I think cost certainly is part of that. Beyond that, I think a certain percentage of the population, it's like a bell curve, right? There's a certain amount of people that will do things on time. There's going to be a certain amount of people that do it ahead of time. And there's going to be a certain amount of people that either don't do anything or it's late. And you see that on filing taxes all the time, right? You know, if you could get everybody early, you'd be a lot stressed out than you are tax season right now.
So that's right.
That's my two cents on that.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned a number of instances just now in those examples that might you know, benefit from using a trust. Because I tell folks, you know, almost anything you can imagine, an attorney can help you make happen. People think they can't control from the grave. Well, there are ways to control from the grave, and quite often that's the use of trust. But a lot of people will say, do I need one? And they think, no, they don't. Now that the estate tax laws have changed, maybe, and even I've heard attorneys say, oh, they don't need a trust. But as you've outlined, even at the beginning of the show, and just now in those examples, there are still so many times that people might need trust. So what do you think? Can we talk through some of the circumstances where this idea, you know, of having a trust might be applicable versus no longer needed?
Yeah, absolutely. I like this question, too, because clients come in a lot of times and they think they know what they want. They say, Dennis, we're here today because we want to trust. Okay, well, why do you want to trust? It's always the why. And I always use the example, I love ice cream, for those of the listeners that know me. Going to the trust store is like going to the ice cream store. There's a million flavors, and there's a flavor for whatever you need to do. If you have minor children, there's a minor's trust. If you have a disabled child, so we always want to get to the root of what flavor do you like, what's appropriate for you. So that's the first part. The other part of that is there's always a balance, and I think the hardest part, and I don't say that to discourage people, but to encourage people, is to weigh the pros and the cons. So the pros are, we're trying to achieve a specific goal, which is a good thing. I'm trying to protect my assets for the benefit of minors. Who are we going to find as trustees? A lot of times people say, I'd like to do a trust. And then when it comes to the issue of, well, who's going to serve as the trustee? I don't have anybody. That sometimes could be difficult. And sometimes clients aren't willing to use a corporate trustee because they're either scared or they misunderstand how the fee structures work on that. So sometimes selecting the appropriate fiduciary could be a very difficult thing. The other thing is, by adding a trust in certain circumstances, you are increasing the complexity of the client's estate plan. So when a client comes in, I might say, look, you have two options here. You can do a will that leaves everything outright to your two kids in equal shares, or, you know, one of your children has a rocky marriage and the other child has, you know, a lot of IRS obligations. We could do a trust for each of your kids to protect their inheritance. They love the idea of that, but when you go and you explain, well, here's how the trust is going to operate, and the trust has to file tax returns typically every year, and we have to change all the beneficiary designations of your non-probate assets, you're shaking your head because you know all of these issues. But I think when you sit down with the client's going to turn on, you know what, Dennis, thanks for pointing that out, but we don't think a trust is appropriate. So our job is really to give them the options, to outline the pros and the cons. There are certain times where I do tell clients I don't think a trust is appropriate. A client might come in and say, I have certain, I'm going to be sued, and I want to do a trust for asset protection measures. It's too late generally to do, right? You're supposed to do that before you have that. So a trust is not appropriate. We don't want to put a client into something, but there's a balance there of increasing the cost and the complexity of the estate plan versus what's the client willing to do.
Well, and what else ends up happening is they don't realize there is a coordination of their estate planning goals, in that you could go through the trouble of working with them on a trust where they might have said, hey, it is appropriate. I am worried about this spouse. I think he's only, you know, he's a good for nothing, and he's going to break my daughter's heart and, you know, take all of her assets. So, I mean, there might be times where there might be that trust, but then they don't have any of the assets going through the trust. You know, so when you say about beneficiary designation changes, sometimes if they're not following through and making sure it's all coordinated, it's amazing how many times I've had people think they've done the estate planning and didn't follow through, or changed everything after they met with the attorney who set up the documents, and now they got an idea because they heard it on the radio or read something and got clever and went and made all their accounts maybe transfer on death or something like that.
Yeah, and it could be something inadvertent. I had a client in yesterday, as a matter of fact. Mom passed away, and there were several annuities, and all the beneficiary designations were perfect going to the kids. There was a smaller annuity of about $30,000, and it named the five grandkids in equal shares. And I don't think it was anybody's fault. I think mom just had this annuity that nobody knew about. She had for a long time. Well, what's the problem? The problem is that three of the five grandchildren are minors, and they're under 18. So by law, the insurance company is not going to pay out a distribution to somebody who's under 18. And unfortunately, there wasn't minors trust language that says, no, we've created a trust for the benefit of these minor children, just pay it to the trustee. So the problem is we're probably going to have to go into court and ask a judge to issue an order to the insurance company and create what's called segregated accounts for these minors. Is it the end of the world? It's not the end of the world. The kids are still going to get their money, but what's the problem? There's going to be some extra hurdles, a little bit of extra attorney fees to probably avoid something that could have been easily done with the Benny designation.
Yeah, and as we're talking about taxes, we're going to talk about some of the tax implications of what Dennis just described as well, and why it's important to talk with your attorney with estate planning and taxes, coordinating that. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's now 6:30. Your current temperature is 29. Tomorrow, you're going to be high near 43. On Friday, you're going to be partly sunny with the high near 28. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 12 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny with the high near 28. Saturday night, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 25. And Sunday is going to be snow before noon and rain and snow, and you're going to get high near 35. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We are talking with attorney Dennis Pappas of Vasiliadis Pappas & Associates. This evening, we are talking about taxes and cash flow planning as part of your estate planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I just want to point out, when we talk about estate planning and the coordination of that with cash flow planning and taxes, folks, Dennis just gave an example that if you're not aware and staying on top of tax reform and, you know, beneficiary designations, you could inadvertently have some consequences that you had not anticipated or planned for. So in that example, he had a grandmother who, maybe unbeknownst to her children, had this little annuity sitting out there that she hadn't mentioned to anyone and thought she was probably doing something really sweet, naming her five grandchildren as beneficiaries. Now, that might have been a small annuity. Maybe it was $30,000, but the same thing could apply to an annuity that might be $150,000. And what some people don't realize is annuities have different tax consequences than certain investments like stock with qualified dividends, or maybe, you know, even different tax consequences to something like an IRA or life insurance. So you have to understand that assets have different consequences. An annuity, the investment in the contract, grows, and then that growth comes out as all ordinary income. If in this example, the woman had $150,000 that maybe she had invested, you know, $20,000 in so many years ago, there would be $130,000 of growth that would be distributed amongst her five children. With tax reform in 2018, there's something called the kiddie tax. And to the extent that children have unearned income over $2,100, it will get taxed now at trust and estate tax rates. Trust and estate tax rates are at 37% at $12,500 or $12,000, something like that. Am I right? $12,000. Because the tax is at 37% at $12,500. So in that situation, that would be unearned income for those kids. And so this wonderful thing might result in huge income tax consequences. So we just want to be careful what we're doing. Dennis, we have a call on line one from CB in South Whitehall. Hi, CB. How can we help you?
Hi, Lori. I enjoy your Wednesday program.
Thank you. Whoops, did we lose you, CB?
Hello.
There we go. Hi. Go ahead. Keep going.
How are you?
Good.
I've got a question for Lori and her guest.
Oh, this is another caller.
But I could leave you with the question and just listen to
it. Okay, that would be great. Go ahead.
It's about executors.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I got several questions. One would be, is there a fee that is a standard kind of fee that executors would get out of an estate?
Okay.
Or something like that along those lines?
Okay.
Number two, does the executor have to be in the same general area of just a matter of convenience or able to follow the will?
Okay.
Or is it okay sometimes if the executor has to come in from a distance, and then I guess there would have to be separate arrangements for the financial end,
okay.
You know, for expenses?
Uh-huh.
And number three is, in cases where maybe you don't have too much, either you're not too confident about immediate family to name as executors, something along those lines, is there a service that one can use?
Okay.
You know, almost, you know, maybe some sort of access that online or through an attorney where you could get executors, get the use of an executor.
Yep.
And how much would that cost? Is that going to be a flat charge or would that be as a percentage of the estate?
Okay, this is great. And I didn't catch your name. What is your name?
Yes, Richard.
Richard. Okay, Richard, we will let you go, and then we'll answer those questions. So
hey,
stay listening. Thank you. And I also want to thanks. And I also want to mention CB. We lost you somehow, so if you want to call back, we'd be happy to take your question there. So Dennis, Richard, we're going to take Richard's questions, and then we'll take CB. So Richard asked about executors. Is there a fee?
So an executor is entitled to a commission. The commission is generally based on a variety of factors. So many people think it's a flat percentage or something like that, and it's not. There are guidelines. Typically, each county's Register of Will, Orphans Court, will produce a scale. Now, I always tell people quickly on this part is it really depends on the size of the estate, obviously, the nature of the estate, what's in the estate. For example, you could have $1 million if it's all in one checking account and the will names one beneficiary. That's a pretty easy estate, even though it sounds very large, versus you could have a small $200,000 estate with a house that's underwater, 10 different bank accounts, 20 different beneficiaries. I probably would say the executor commission on maybe that smaller estate may be pretty close to the executor commission on the big one. So there's definitely a commission. FYI, if the executor takes a commission, it is taxable income to the executor. So that's why in many family situations, if the children, for example, are the executors, you typically see them waive the commission and they don't take it because they'd rather pay at the much less in Pennsylvania inheritance tax rate than the higher federal and state income tax rates.
Right. And then the executor doesn't have to live in the area?
Not necessarily, especially with technology nowadays. I don't see that being a I wouldn't think that's a requirement.
Right. And then no immediate family. And this goes to Tom's question that he had emailed in. If there's no immediate family, there's options out there, not necessarily like a phone-in service, which I think Richard might have referred to, but corporate fiduciaries.
Absolutely. Corporate fiduciaries are very standard, whether it's a bank trust company or there are other standalone trust companies. But certainly, and we have some pretty good ones here in the Lehigh Valley.
And if you don't have immediate family, but you have a long trusted family friend, there's nothing that says you can't use a friend as well. It doesn't have to be family.
Absolutely. The one last thing I'll add on here, and Richard's comment brought in, I think this is public service announcement, very important. People might see in a will where an attorney has, the attorney that drafted in the will says that the executor shall hire the attorney who drafted the will to represent the executor. This is my personal opinion. I think that's borderline unethical, number one. Number two, the executor is not legally obligated to hire that attorney no matter what the will says. Okay. The executor is the only one in his or her discretion to hire any attorney they want to represent them. Now, that's not to say that's a blanket statement. There are very limited circumstances that I would consider that an attorney can put in the will that I would like the executor to hire me, but there have to, I think, be some extenuating circumstances there. So I see that more often than I would like. Be a good consumer and be educated and be careful out there.
Thank you for that, Dennis. And Richard, thank you for calling in with your question. And one last comment. If you do have a corporate trustee or bank, I'm not sure if Dennis had mentioned that they typically have standard fee schedules. So you can inquire about that as you explore that. I hope we have CB still. CB, are you there?
Yes, I am I'm on the phone. Yes.
Thank you for staying on with us. Oh, how can we help you?
Okay. First of all, I enjoy the show. Thank you for doing this. So it's maybe a two-part question, but they are related.
Okay.
My wife and I, we have an 18-year-old son who has autism. And a couple of years ago, we created an irrevocable third-party special needs trust for him.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't funded it. And the idea behind that is, you know, so we think we still have a few years left in us. And the idea is, you know, when we pass, the whatever remains in our estate would go directly to the trust. So we have written a will and so on to that effect. So the big question is there any strategy, you know, when it comes to funding a special needs trust? And secondly, should me, you know, I and my wife, should we create trust for ourselves and name each other, you know, trustees of our trust to protect our hard-earned assets from, you know, some unfortunate incident so that there is money left over for our son?
Okay, CB, that was a lot, but we'll see what Dennis can come up with. That was good,
right?
Though. Very good. Very pertinent.
CB, first of all, it sounds like you've done some pretty good planning.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've outlined for the listeners as well, if you're in CB's situation, this is pretty classic special needs planning. It sounds like there's a third-party special needs trust, CB, that you and your wife have created.
Yes.
It is not funded right now, and that's okay. That's okay that it's not funded. Some things to consider, though, because what typically happens is the third-party trust in your type of planning, it's just a bucket. And right now, it's an empty bucket, and that's fine. But we just want to make sure that in your will, and also if you and your wife have any type of beneficiary designations, your IRAs, 401ks, life insurance, basically what your will says and what you want your beneficiary designations to say is after the second spouse passes away, we want all of those assets to go into the bucket. We want them to then, after you pass away, go into the special needs trust. So funding it, the trust is on standby mode right now, and that's perfectly fine. It will be funded. You might just go in and check, make sure your will and your beneficiary designations are pointed. You have to actually point them in the right direction so that legally they funnel in and go into this third-party trust. Another thing that I just want to point here, I really like these third-party trusts. They're really good planning tools. The nice thing about doing the third-party trust the way that you did it, creating it during your lifetime, is you have the opportunity to notify other friends and family members, because if for whatever reason they intend to leave your son any type of an inheritance, what happens is you and your wife were proactive, right? You were not reactive. You set up this great plan, but maybe there's an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor, a friend, somebody else, who a sibling who has an intent to leave to your son. They might leave it directly to your son, and now all of a sudden there's an issue with his benefits. So what you can do is you can typically, what I would do in that case as the lawyer, I would send a letter or give you a general letter, say, please be aware that my wife and I have set up a special trust for our dear son. If you have any thought of contributing, please show this letter to your estate planning attorney or your CPA so they can coordinate your estate plan so that all of these monies are going into this third-party trust. But I think you've done everything spot on. I don't see any hole in that plan from afar.
No, thank you for that. But so the second part of the question is, so, you know, my wife and I, should we consider creating trusts, you know, where we can put our retirement funds in and protect it from some unfortunate, you know, incident, maybe a claim or some creditors coming after us or an unfortunate health event that drains all our money, so that, you know, we provide another shield to protect our earnings and our assets during our lifetime,
mm-hmm.
so that there is money left over to go to my son's special needs.
Yeah, the answer to that question, CB, I can't give you as direct an answer, and here's why. I think it's a good idea, definitely worth getting evaluated. There are certain trusts that you and your wife might consider. You might, for example, consider what's generically referred to as an irrevocable grantor trust. That's something where you and your wife can take some of your assets and put them in there, and you would have some degree of creditor protection in case of, for example, you or your wife have long-term care costs or medical costs. That analysis, though, and it's right on the theme for today, it's going to be based on you and your wife's age, your cash flow, what assets you have. So it's worth looking into, but I really can't give you a more direct answer without knowing all the facts in your case.
Understood. No, well, that's a good lead, though. But I think in principle what you're saying is it might be worth considering. So right. I
Absolutely.
Appreciate that direction.
Good. Thanks, CB. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you, CB. Appreciate it. Folks, we're coming up on our last break. Love the calls. Love the questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening, attorney Dennis Pappas from Vassiliadis Pappas Associates. I like saying that, Dennis.
I like the sound of that, Lori.
So for folks who didn't hear at the top of the hour, Dennis is a partner in that firm, and we're excited about the new name, Vassiliadis Pappas. So they have a website as well. Can I ask you what the website is called now because you changed the website?
A lot easier. www.lawvp.com.
So lawvp for VassiliadisPappas.com. So lawvp.com. So I thought what we would do, we really appreciate the calls and questions tonight. And Tom, we had a listener who emailed in a question, which just for folks who are interested, you can email questions in and we'll do our best to get those on the show. And that's through yourfinancialchoices.com. And Tom had emailed in. He said, would you please include information pertinent to childless couples, particularly when close to retirement? There are a lot of us out here. Are trusts the best way to plan? What are options post-mortem if no trusted friends or relatives? So I think what he's saying there, first of all, when they're getting close to retirement, they don't have children. That goes back to kind of how we started the show, Dennis, I believe, when we're talking about aging and being worried about aging and elder planning and long-term care planning. I think that becomes more important to people, especially if they feel they don't have, children to kind of help out with that. Are trusts the best way to plan? So we can talk about how that might correspond to any of this. And when he says postmortem, he means after they have passed. What are options postmortem if no trusted friends or relatives, meaning who's going to help with the estate administration, I would expect? Is it organizations or lawyers? And so that's kind of a big picture. And then when we're done answering Tom's question, let's take some hits at all the different kinds of assets and income tax and estate planning nuances of a list of assets. So to Tom's question.
Sure. So let's do the easy part first. And it sounds counterintuitive, and I don't mean to be morbid, but generally speaking, with a broad brush, when somebody passes away, even if they don't have family members or friends, and Richard pointed this out a little bit earlier, certainly there are corporate fiduciaries, corporations that will serve as executors, whether it's a bank, whether it's a standalone trust company. So oftentimes if a client comes in, we're able to identify an appropriate corporate fiduciary to name as the executor in the will. The corporate fiduciary generally will work with an attorney to make sure that the estate is administered in accordance with the will. So, you know, for example, Tom, if you say I'd like to leave all of my estate to Temple University, my alma mater, that's fine. We would still name a corporate executor, and the executor's job is to make sure that the administration, all the bills are paid, tax returns are filed, whatever legally needs to be done to conclude the administration of the estate, that's their job. Again, we talked a little bit about fees earlier. Typically, these are based on There are schedules based on the assets of the estate, and each institution's a little bit different. Typically, the attorney is also entitled to an attorney fee. Now, I don't want to turn this into an attorney fee, but all attorneys charge differently. Some attorneys charge by the hour. Some attorney fees charge a flat rate. Some by the percentage. The most important thing is just to make sure you have an understanding ahead of time and get it in writing on what the agreement with the attorney is. That way, there's no misunderstandings down the road. So the post-mortem part of that is really not as difficult as one would think. So what's the hard part? I'm going to use a fancy term, inter vivos.
There you go.
I want to use my Latin that I never get to use. During lifetime. The inter vivos planning, the lifetime planning is two major buckets. And we touched upon this a little bit earlier. So what happens if the client in this situation, mentally or physically, is not capable of administering their financial affairs? We talked about the core estate plan being a will, a financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, living will. I probably would add onto that framework in a case like this, a revocable living trust. We're not doing this for tax reasons. We're not doing this for any other reason other than to help in the administration of someone's estate while they're alive if they can't administer it. So typically what we would do is the client would transfer all of their assets or as much as can be done into the revocable trust. The client would be the trustee of his or her trust. This type of trust, specific flavor of ice cream, the client can go in and out of the trust anytime they want. It's their legal alter ego. But what the trust says is at the time that the client can no longer handle their affairs, we would name a successor or a backup trustee. And if there's not a family or a friend or somebody else that we trust, we can look to a corporate backup trustee, and their job would be to administer during the lifetime. Now, if the client regains physical or mental capacity, that's fine. They could jump right back in. So the corporate trustee as a backup could be a good tool in that situation. What's one of the downsides there? The size of the estate. It's going to be difficult to get a corporate trustee to jump in. Very, very rough range. But, you know, if you have roughly $500,000 or less in liquidity, it might be a little bit difficult to find a corporate trustee.
Now, Dennis, you said, and maybe attorneys aren't in the business of doing this because you do, you know, documents, et cetera. But if you had the case where you might have a lifelong client that you see in this situation, you want to help them out, and their assets might not be to the level that a corporate trustee would step in, could you refer to another attorney? Are there people out there that would do that?
Yeah, there are certainly it doesn't have to be a corporate fiduciary. It could be another lawyer. It could be an accountant, CPA.
If you wanted to avoid that conflict of interest or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing I would say there, especially, for example, with CPAs or financial advisors or attorneys is the time that we have.
Right.
So, for example, are you and I, I appreciate the trust of the client because they always ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say, I can't open your mail. I can't pay your electric bill. We're not set up for that.
Right.
That's where the corporate fiduciary. Now, even if you have a corporate fiduciary, you know, that's where you have to coordinate, because you might have a financial advisor and an accountant that you've been working with your entire life. You have to be careful with some of these corporate fiduciaries because they're going to want to do all of that in-house. So if you say, hey, Lori's been my accountant and my financial advisor, and we use Valley National, and we've been using them for 30, 40 years, and I accumulated these assets, that's where we have to make sure that whoever the backup trustee is, they need to be aware to maintain those lifelong professional relationships.
Mm-hmm.
What about on the healthcare side quickly? So that's the financial side. The corporate fiduciary is not going to talk to the doctor and not going to deal with the healthcare side. So there are care agencies out there. I really don't want to name any specific because I don't want to leave anybody out and get anybody upset. But certainly estate planning attorneys will know in the community who are some of these care agencies that will step in and be your healthcare advocate if you need one at that time. So I think the revocable trust, corporate fiduciary in the financial side, together with the care advocate on the healthcare side, that's the pretty good framework for a classic plan in the type of situation that Tom's outlining.
That's great. Thank you, Dennis. And Tom, I hope that helped. And, you know, it also helps if you then, too, as you're preparing to go talk to an attorney, kind of get your own goals in order. Sit down, look at what your assets are, plan out what you want to, you know, what your options are going to be, because it might include long-term care planning as well and things like that. Dennis, I know there's only so much time left. We have 6 minutes, and there was a few things I want to do. But really quickly, I did have someone call me the other day, and they had indicated that their mom was, because you guys do elder planning. You get these questions where people say, how do I protect mom's assets? So mom's very ill, you know, 100 pounds, not doing well, has $200,000 in an IRA and $100,000 in a bank account. And they say, how can I protect her assets? There's a 5-year look back in Pennsylvania?
Correct.
Do they have options? I don't know if you can answer that in 1 minute.
I'll give you the thumbnail version. There's always something we could do. It's never too late. And even if a client is in a nursing home, there's something we can do. I generally would say, I'll give you the conclusion, if it's a single person, even if they're in a nursing home, you generally can save approximately 1/2 of the assets. But that's really not the main goal. That's the silver lining, right? We can do that, and I'm happy to do that. We are not doing that type of planning, though, if in any way it interferes with the quality of care that the client is getting. So if that means mom or dad is going to go to a substandard facility, mom or dad are my client, and I make it very clear to the agent under power of attorney of the children, that's a conflict for me, and that's a line I'm not willing to cross. We can definitely do stuff, but mom and dad have to be the priority beneficiary second.
Very good. I like that, Dennis, because we call that, do you really want to impoverish your parents?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's sometimes what it could be. But there's some long-term planning that people should be thinking about ahead of time, especially in my, in my opinion, when you know there's a family history that seems to kind of go down the generations, maybe you're that person who needs to get in and do some of your planning up front, before something sets in.
Once you hit 65, in my opinion, that's where I think the estate planning transitions into long-term care planning. That's where you start, the client comes in early enough. Should I set up an irrevocable trust? Do I want to put the house into the irrevocable trust? Do I need long-term care insurance? Those are the issues that are incident to the demographic 65 or older, in my opinion.
Okay, good. So let's take 2 minutes and see if we could just run down a few things. So a hit list. When we have people who have individual accounts, what does that say to you? Someone walks in, they have everything in their name alone.
So if they have everything in their name alone, that's a good indication that those are the assets that are going to be controlled by the will. And if assets pass by the will, as you know, Lori, in Pennsylvania, we talked about no one really is going to worry about the federal estate tax. So what happens when somebody inherits assets in Pennsylvania? We have an inheritance tax. Anything that goes to a spouse is 0%. Anything that goes to children and grandchildren is 4.5%. Anything that goes to a sibling. So if I leave an inheritance to my sibling, it's 12%. Everybody else, niece, nephew, friends, 15%. Charities are of course, 0. So if a client has assets in his or her name alone, they are going to be controlled by the will. We could talk about step up and basis. I'm not sure how much time we have.
Yeah, we probably don't.
Not a problem.
But,
good question.
So assets basically that someone controls are going to be subject or included in their inheritance assets, basically. So they could control assets that are in their name alone. That would go through the will. But there might be IRAs that have named beneficiaries. That's not going to go through the will. It's going to go based on the beneficiary. But because the decedent had control of it, it would be included in their estate. So there's a number of different assets, folks, that you have to be careful of when you're looking at estate planning as to the income tax ramifications of those when to you during your lifetime and then to your subsequent beneficiaries and the inclusion for inheritance tax purposes and how they're passing. It all has to be coordinated. So sorry, I don't have more time to go through that. But Dennis, your firm does have some education seminars coming up as well. And what are the topics for those?
We do. And we typically do these once a month. And these are on typically long-term care planning. What does the 65 plus demographic need to worry about? And we talk about certain types of asset protection trusts and when they're appropriate and when they're not appropriate. Our next free seminars are on Tuesday, February the 20th at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, February the 21st at 7 p.m. If any listener is interested, phone number is 610-694-9455. There's also information on the website, www.lawvp.com.
Dennis, this has been fantastic tonight. You're such a great speaker, such a great teacher. He is a wealth of knowledge. You're probably not. Are you under 40 still? Because you had that award, right? What, you were the up and coming attorney. I have no idea how old
I am. I am under 40, not for very long, and we have a couple of rising star awards in the shelf. But you're, thank you for tooting my horn, because you know I don't like to toot it. I owe you on this.
Dennis is excellent. So again, congratulations, Dennis, on your partnership at Vasiliadis Pappas Associates. And that website, again, is lawvp.com. And there's more information probably about the firm and yourself and George and Stan and the educational seminars and information sessions that you have.
Thank you once again, Lori. I love coming in here. You know that.
Yeah, he's great. And thank you, listeners, for being here tonight. Lori, thank you for taking the call. Shondi, thanks for running the board. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. We want you to remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. I forgot, next week's show, attorney Jim Ruggiero to discuss the IRA trust. So that's next week. We're having another attorney. I love attorneys. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.